now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out, our last LGBT History Month show.
He's Andy Shilton and I'm Aled Osborne, and this week we're talking about the history of fetish.
Colin and Andy will be live to talk about the subject, and Saski's back. This time chin wagging with Sue Saunders.
And Terry is here with some news extra.
All today, right here on Shout Out. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So I hear it was a really good show last week.
It was amazing.
Yeah. I even had people asking me for links to it for their dissertation, believe it or not.
Yes. I know who that was.
You know who that was. Yeah, I thought you were. So, hello.
Hello, darling.
Radio Wifey.
Are you okay?
I'm good. How are you?
Nice red.
What, you mean my top? Yeah.
So if you were to a radio husband and wife, am I radio son?
How old do you think I am?
Ouch. That was harsh, Aled. So, harsh.
I could think of worse parents to have than you two, to be honest. It would be lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, we're a family.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm Miss Beaver's dad.
She hasn't got a dad. Her parents dropped her at birth. Just left her on the side.
So, and hello, Andy.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I hope everyone is well, too. Mm. And I've just realised that Steph is on a green microphone with a green jumper
again. Well, we keep doing this.
Yeah, most weeks we're colour coordinating with the mics, but you look really comfy sat over there. You're just chilling.
Chilling in my little corner.
I don't know why I can't see you and the light's broken, that's why.
Put him in the dark.
I should say, I quite often function in the dark better.
It's a naughty corner.
We are talking about Fetish Week.
Of course.
Indeed, yes.
That's why we're all in 6-inch
stilettos. Do you have any fetishes that you can talk about on air?
I don't know whether I would be allowed to talk about the things on air, really. Yeah, but like, there are a few that's there.
Like? Can't talk about them on air?
Probably not. Okay. No, they're probably too...
I won't ask Steph, because I know she can't talk about hers on air. They're far too dirty.
6-inch stiletto standing on street corners would be yours, I guess.
Brilliant. I would pay good money to see that.
What, me in stilettos?
Yeah, 6-inch.
Yeah, not going to happen.
On a street corner. That's in a nice, like, rubber/PVC/neoprene dress.
I'd just look like a big fat blob if I did that.
That has, like, cross, like corset back, so it's, like, cross-roped.
No. I reckon you could charge 2 and 6 and get away with it.
And all the listeners go, what the hell's 2 and 6?
Surely you want a couple of bombs.
And you questioned whether you were old enough to be my
mother. I didn't question my elder. I'm old enough to be your grandmother.
No.
It's 39 years since decivilization.
There you go. Mm. Well, at my age, that's quite recent history.
sorry, 49 years, sorry. 49
can I,
years, not
can I just quickly mention Wave, who take us live tonight, who cover Western Supermare and North Somerset. Straight after this show, Gary's going to be talking to Steve Miller about his campaign to raise awareness of domestic abuse in the LGBT plus community. So join Wave after this show, live.
Cool.
Cheap plug. Talking about fetish, we all love a plug.
What's a cheap one?
Oh, wow. We'll talk about that later.
So, no, seriously, if you've got any fetish, you can talk about one there, obviously.
Fetish?
Yeah.
I don't think I have.
So, there's pretty much a fetish for everything.
There really
there?
Is.
There
there's
is.
A flag genuinely. For, there's a flag for every fetish.
I think the internet opened up a lot of people's eyes, is it? Kind of like...
I saw the chastity flag today.
I didn't know there was a chastity flag.
For people who are locked and owned.
Oh. Yeah. Are you supposed to walk around with a flag?
I don't... Well, there's a flag for everything.
Yeah, true.
Have you been to a fetish party? I've been to a few fetish parties.
Yes. I've been to a fetish wedding.
Yeah. I haven't been to a wedding. I've been to a few, like, kink nights where people are exploring their fetishes. I've been to quite a few of them.
Well, we're going to get into the history of it a little bit later when we talk to Carl and Andy, and hopefully we'll find out kind of some of its origins too. But we're going to stick with I'm not going to say played and boring because it's not played and boring. It's Saski. She's lovely. But she's catching up with Sue Saunders. Have a listen to this.
Saski 5. Oh, yeah. LGBTQ plus shout out Radio Sasky 7. So in case you didn't know, and where have you been if you didn't know, it is LGBTQ plus History Month. So to mark that, and for this week, Sasky 7, I have with me somewhat of what I would say is a national treasure, okay, particularly to our LGBTQ plus community. I would like to welcome to today's Sasky 7, Sue Sanders. Sue, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's been an amazing month. Thank you so much.
I bet. Listen, how has it been? It must have been very busy because we're coming towards the end of it now. How's it been?
It's been frenetic. The pain is that I look at the calendar and I just weep because there are so many things I can't get to. So it's almost, you know, I've almost been disenabled by the success. I mean, I do what I can, but, you know, I'm getting on now. So traveling around is quite tiring, but I've been to some amazing stuff and I've seen amazing stuff on the calendar that I just wish I could get to.
Yeah, I know. And also, unfortunately, February's like the shortest month, isn't it?
It was a bit foolish of me, I agree. We didn't think about that. Our brains were in schools at the time, and it was a quiet month, and it had a half term, yes, which was really important back in 2004-05 when we set it up, because we wanted teachers to see libraries and museums and other people and what they were doing and give them confidence to take it back into schools.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, listen, don't be foolish. The fact is you set it up. That's the most important thing because we didn't have this. I did a little bit of research, actually, about LGBTQ plus History Month. And according to Wikipedia, correct me if I'm wrong, but according to Wikipedia, apparently back in the US in 94, that's when it was originally officially celebrated. And then it wasn't until sort of obviously with you and schools out in 2004 where it was actually launched in the UK. But I'm thinking,
that's right.
In world history, I mean, that's crazy. You know, we have a lot of history anyway, but 94 and you know, 2004.
Yeah, but remember what was happening in 94 in Britain at the time. We had Section 28.
Yes, well, I get that, I see. But I mean, I just think, you know, gosh, we've had so much, we've got so much to show. So this is why, bringing it back to where we're at now, I'm so pleased we have got LGBT plus History Month. And I just want to actually take this time to say thank you for introducing it to the UK. You know, because, you know, we did have Section 28 and we've had the backlash of that. But speaking of that, let's move forward and we're talking about the positive future. September 20. We're going to finally see the new regulations for an LGBT plus inclusive education. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm really excited. I have some concerns because I don't think the DfE have been anywhere near as proactive and productive as they should be. And I think what's brilliant is that Wales has learnt from the fact that the English DfE did not do good guidelines. And in Wales, they're now making those lessons compulsory. They're not mucking about with the guidelines that we have from the English DfE. But I think there are plenty of teachers out there who are ready and waiting and getting out there and will do some great stuff. But I think there are also a lot of teachers who are beginning to worry and not know quite how to do it. And all one can hope is that they'll find the innumerable resources that are around, like the Classroom website, like Educate and Celebrate, like No Outsiders, the Proud Trust. I mean, there's plenty of charities who are out there doing some great work and have produced the resources.
Yeah, I mean, and that's right. And again, you founded the Classroom, which is the website with the lesson plans. That's free for the teachers to support an LGBTQ plus inclusive education. Did you, with all your years of campaigning, did you ever think we'd get to this point? I know, obviously, we still have a long way. I'm obviously an inclusion trainer myself for the LGBTQ plus curriculum. So I see it when I'm working with teachers and students that we've still got a way to come and we shouldn't get complacent. But I mean, with all your years of campaigning as an activist, you know, did you ever think we'd get to this? And obviously with Section 28, did you ever think we'd get this far?
No. I mean, it does feel quite extraordinary. The amount of buy-in to History Month and buy-in to inclusivity has been amazing. Mm. What is worrying, I was at a big NEU conference of LGBT teachers.
Yeah.
And a very high proportion of them did not feel comfortable to be out and proud to their students.
Yes.
Now, that worries me. I mean, I was out and proud in the 60s, but I'm white, I'm middle class, I'm able-bodied, and I was a drama teacher. And I knew it wasn't going to be my career. You know, I was fully aware of the fact that I had other fish to fry. So, you know, if I was sacked, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But it is worrying, I think, that that we haven't got a confidence in all schools that all LGBT people can feel that they're safe to be out to their students. And that does worry me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And that's what I mean. Like, I think on the surface, people can become complacent, can't they? They think, all right, well, we've got these changes. Even when we think about equal marriage, you know, and the Equality Act 2010, they think, well, we've got these changes, so we're okay. But actually, no, there's so much rippling under the surface that still needs to be supported and dealt with, doesn't it?
There is a lot of work to be done.
But I just wanted to say, when I opened up with the saying that I thought you was a national treasure, I think it's fair comment, because I want to just touch before we go. You recently won a Rainbow Honours Award, which I was there to see you receive it. I was actually on stage seeing you receive it. Can you please tell the listeners what that was for?
Well, it was a Lifetime Achievement Award. It was totally out of the blue. I wasn't expecting it.
Mm.
And it was wonderful to get, and to get from my peers, from people who know my work. It means a great deal.
Yeah.
And as you rightly say, I mean, I have been a bit busy. I mean, one of the things that in fact, I've just been on a Skype meeting with the Independent Advisory Group to the Home Office on hate crime. And I've done a lot of work with the criminal justice system around hate crime and trying to get the criminal justice system to take hate crime seriously. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've been passionate about is to work in a way which isn't just tackling homophobia, but is looking at all the isms and enabling people to recognize that you can't just deal with one ism. You've got to deal with misogynism. You've got to deal with racism. You've got to deal with able-bodyism and ageism.
Yes. Because
as LGBT people, we are in all those groups. Mm. And if we leave one of those groups behind, then if they don't have their rights, in the end, we don't have ours. And I think that recognition is really crucial for us as an organization, as a community, rather, to be aware of, you know, turning around and handing and giving a hand to all the people that are still receiving prejudice and problems.
No, I totally agree with you. Unfortunately, Sue, we have got to wrap it up now. But listen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on to my Sassy 7. For those who want to follow up, you can see Schools Out. It's schools-out.org.uk for more information. But Sue, thank you so much and take care.
The better website is lgbthistorymonth.org.uk. The Schools Out website is a bit neglected at the moment. We need to freshen it up.
So thank you so much for coming on Sassy 7. Happy LGBT plus History Month. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I think you like that one, don't you? Is that one of your favourites?
Yes.
How is that? Was it last? No, I wasn't here last week. It was the week before.
Week before, yeah.
And Gert that's Lush. The weekend.
It is Gert Lush.
Slightly tampered with.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must have been a mix from you with the handbags and high heels. So
I did play it on Monday, actually.
That's,
but we played it last
Karad's, Thursday. Karad's Take On Me remix, as you can probably tell from the backing. So it's called good. Blinding Lights, a song.
And it's number one.
Is it number one?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cool. Not this mix, great. The original mix is number one. Is it number one in UK and the US?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
The researcher knows the answers. Yeah.
And I think
in the hit parade, as Terry would call it.
I think the original was number one as well in 1985, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Aha.
Andy told me. I've just broken a record with the amount of views they've had on the YouTube video.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It. That's probably...
It is a fantastic video. If you haven't seen it, you don't know. It was really groundbreaking.
I don't think it is the UK number one.
Is it
anymore?
Not? No. Aled.
Sorry. It does change an awful lot.
But it
shaming
was,
me on air.
But it was number one for a while, but I don't think it's the current number one.
So our researcher is behind the times and got
it
wrong.
I know what it was. It's Spotify's number one.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
That is correct.
Anyway.
Apologies.
As long as the news is going to be correct.
Please have faith in me that I know everything about the news and what's going on everywhere.
Are you going to have any weird...
At all times.
She's the person with the most.
Are you going to have any weird words that you're going to laugh and giggle over again?
Oh, well...
Because it is quite funny when you say something really, really serious in the news and you just suddenly like burst out into laughter.
What, like Japtin Kak?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. And please just at one point just go, yeah.
Yeah,
I do that anyway. Yeah.
Is it just me or is her mic muff clashing with her top?
Enough of this. Come on. Let's have some news.
Who's Mike News? News.
Who is Mike
News?
Mr. Mike Muff?
Anyway, carry on.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday the 27th of February.
Greta Thunberg will be making an appearance in Bristol on Friday, the 28th of February. The local alternative newspaper B247 says that she will be participating in and addressing a rally of young people protesting at the city's council house, also known as City Hall, on the subject of climate change and the environment. Ms. Thunberg has become the face of a movement that has encompassed many countries around the globe, with activists risking arrest and in some cases maltreatment by the security services for protesting over what many now see as a climate emergency. Even in moderate Britain, there has been a consternation at the listing in a guidebook on extremism of many progressive and ecological campaign groups alongside the very real threat of far-right cells. Many LGBTQ people have picked up on Thunberg's visit to the city for a number of reasons. Firstly, there is a growing consensus that ecological stability allows for the economic and political stability that allows democracies to flourish and for human rights to be respected, particularly those of minority groups. Matthew Hodgson from the gay men's health charity GMFA wrote in the magazine Boys last year that the environment should be an LGBTQ issue of priority for just these reasons. Another reason why many gay or trans people running blogs have picked up on Ms. Thunberg's visit is that the environmental activist has frequently been targeted by the same people who attack LGBTQ people online. Authoritarian president of Brazil, Jose... Thank you, who admits to having violently oppressive views towards gay people, trans people, women and indigenous peoples, and who admires past Latin American dictators such as the murderous generals Pinochet and Galtieri, describes Ms. Thunberg as a brat and has advocated physical removal of her from public life. Online trolls, the majority of them white and nationalistic, have also targeted Ms. Thunberg, who remains resolute in her protest actions. The protest is organised by Bristol Youth Strike for Climate, is due to take place from 11 a.m. on Friday, February 28th. Reporters from BT47 newspaper will be covering the protest.
And now something of interest to followers of the ever-changing internecine civil wars that take place on the political left, a place where many LGBTQ people make their homes. Many left-wing groups are particularly struggling at the moment to deal with trans rights and gender identity politics. And nowhere is this more true than in the daily paper, The Morning Star, which was established in 1930 as an organ of the Communist Party. Now, the paper has had a lesbian and gay rights policy since 1976, when the Communist Party adopted a gay rights platform. However, it has never developed any policies on transgender issues. Critics say that it has fallen under the influence of reactionary feminism, even though it enjoys the support of many trade unions who have active LGBT caucuses. Now, abusive tweets to feminists from overzealous trans people have been reported by the paper, but critics say that harassment in the opposite direction has been glossed over. Matters came to a head last weekend after the Morning Star, which should not be confused with the trashy tabloid Daily Star, ran a badly drawn cartoon which characterised trans women as barracudas masquerading as newts and wanting to eat said newts. The cartoon was condemned by the Labour Party's campaign for LGBT equality and by the LGBT networks within many major trade unions, including the public sector trade union Unison. The Morning Star paper did apologise for the cartoon, saying that it had been not approved correctly and made it to print and online without proper authorisation. But transgender activists remarked on the fact that just days after the apology, the paper published more anti-trans transgender reportage as fact. LGBTQ groups within the trade union movement, which places most of the advertising within the Morning Star, have continued the pressure for change, but from a supportive place, with one union activist blogging that the Morning Star remained an important organ in the face of a largely right-wing press in the UK, and that despite its small circulation, fulfilled an important role in redressing working-class people's concerns.
The Gypsy, Roma and Traveller web portal Travellers Times, which incidentally now includes a section linking to LGBTQ Gypsy organisations, has hailed the victory of controversial boxer Mr Tyson Fury, who has been crowned the heavyweight champion of the world after a heavily viewed international match on Saturday. Mr Fury caused consternation in 2016 when he claimed that he could prove that paedophilia was legalised by a Gay Rights Act, which he claims was passed in 1977. Mr Fury cited no evidence for this bizarre assertion, and it was confirmed by government that no such piece of legislation was ever passed in that or indeed any other year. According to the Jewish media, Fury later went on for an hour-long rant in which he claimed that Jews ran the media, television, newspapers and all the banks, a classic anti-Semitic trope that watchers of anti-Jewish extremism says fuels bigotry and neo-Nazi physical intolerance. Feminist groups have also accused Mr. Fury of violent misogyny after he told women that they belonged in the kitchen and bedroom, and when challenged by a television interviewer about this, he stormed out of the interview. Gay human rights activist Peter Tatchell said that Fury's £20 million prize money was just wrong because prejudice shouldn't pay. But Frank Warren, a boxing promoter, when quizzed by a reporter from Sky News Channel about Mr. Fury's apparent extremist views, explained that he had been in a poor mental state and implied strongly that Mr. Fury was experiencing a prolonged state of breakdown and drug use during this period that the remarks were made. The long-standing LGBT newswire Pink News reported further that Mr. Fury had made some effort to distance himself from these views by claiming to some journalists that he sometimes made a joke. He apparently said, "It's all a bit of tongue-in-cheek and it's all fun and games for me." The Jewish Chronicle newspaper also noted that Fury had tried to renege on his anti-Semitism, but was not convinced of his sincerity. In addition, many gay people and women have noted that Fury has never directly apologised for sheer inaccuracy of his wild claims. Prominent socialist campaigner Callum Garner said that Fury was an absolutely monstrous man, and if you support him, then you are too. Another Twitter user said that he would rather take Ruby Fury over Tyson Fury any day, a reference to popular transgender gothic and metal DJ Ruby Fury from the online station Trans Radio UK. However, writing in Travellers Times magazine, poet Christopher Royal said, "Last night, Tyson Fury became the biggest star in boxing. He became the most talked about man in the world. Last night, a gypsy became a national hero. If you are from a traveller or gypsy background and also LGBTQ or want to support your LGBTQ friends and relatives, then there are articles online in Travellers Times and on the website of the Travellers Movement. An all-gay traveller community is online at lgbttravellerpride.com."
And we'll put links to that on our website. Finally, Bristol's independent comic retailer Excelsior has reintroduced their window display of LGBTQ-friendly comic books. The well-stocked little shop on Bond Street is just a few doors along from the gay lifestyle outlet Prowler, so has become an alternative shopping venue for people living in the city. The display under a rainbow flag showcases some of the best comic books with a strong female or LGBT lead or exploring themes of diversity in their pages. Speculative fiction, which is the dominant narrative in comic books, allows us to explore different versions of ourselves, to change our gender identities, to pursue our dreams and our sexuality freely.
For these news stories and more, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this would be Mr. Mike Muff
and Hans Peregrine.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Do you know, if someone foreign, royal or something, dies, the one person who's not reading the story is going to have to be Hans, isn't it?
I don't know what you're trying to infer, Darren, but it's almost like you're suggesting I get names wrong, which is ludicrous when you think of my last name.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Are you liking that, Alan?
It's all right, yeah, it's fine. Oh, that was really loud. I'm sorry, listeners.
Hello.
It's all right.
Cool. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's
not
you
said you like the modern...
Yeah, no, this playlist tonight is very modern. My name's Alan Osborne and I approve this message.
Anyway, that's Dance Monkey by Tones and I.
They're the biggest selling single of 2020 so far.
Are they?
They are.
It's nice. Yeah. I like it. I don't know why. It reminds me of Hands. That's why I picked it. I think it's the high squeakiest.
Or when she dances, does she look like a monkey?
Does she look like a monkey? Yeah, that's probably true too. So, anyway, we're talking fetish on today's show, and a very warm welcome to Carl and to Andy.
Evening.
So, evening.
It's very,
all right, mate.
It's very nice to be back.
I was going
to
say that was very much.
I just wanted to point out that I have an orange muff this evening, which I'm assuming is deliberate, because obviously, as everyone knows from the hanky code, orange stands for everything goes. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Does it really? Yeah.
It does. Yes, yeah.
What's my colour then mean? An aqua.
Well, I know green, depending on which side you wear it, means you like to be taken for dinner or you like to take people out for dinner. I'm not sure about mint green.
The green, green bars go all the way around me.
Yeah, that's lime green, though. He's taking out for dinner, or depending left or right, he's taking out for dinner or being taken out for dinner.
Okay.
There's a there's a group in America called the International Board of Sodomites. And they do this cabaret show, and the lead, like the chair of the board, do new rulings from the board, and it's a YouTube channel. And they did they've rewritten the hanky code, so like the colours now mean something for like people like today. So one colour is like daddy issues, or like green is like gets funny about their iPhone, and like loads of and it's hilarious. And the first time I watched it, I just had these names of people that I know going.
If you got old and new muddled up, that could get very awkward very quick.
My favourite is if you wear a teddy bear in your pocket. That means you like cuddling.
Aww.
Yeah. I think that's lovely.
That is lovely. That's cute.
It is.
Cute.
I love
you know now, the next time I'm presenting with Alan, he's going to have a teddy bear in his pocket.
Oh, any time I come into this studio, I'm going to have a teddy bear in my pocket.
In all of his pockets.
Anyway, let's go back in time a little bit. Where does the... Well, do we know where the history starts right from? Like, where's the word come from?
Well, first off, I think it's quite important to... We used terminology like fetish and kink quite interchangeably now, but they actually mean different things. The word fetish means just an item that's been given special significance, basically. So if you're wearing a piece of lucky jewellery, then, strictly speaking, that's a fetish. These days we tend to use
it's not about sexual arousal.
Well, these days it tends to be associated much more with that. So you would a fetish item is something that's non-sexual that's been associated with sexuality, like a foot, which is the most common fetish, but not for Alid, as I can see he's retching in the corner.
One of the only things that makes me gag.
Where a kink is actually the behaviour, so the equivalent of that would be, so it's a non-sexual behaviour that's been given sexual significance, so the act of foot worship would be the kink. And he's off again.
I was going to say, did you mention these specifically to make Alid retch in the
and
corner?
We use the term kink because it literally signifies something deviating from the norm of mainstream sexuality, to the point where you were talking about flags earlier. The rubber pride flag has a big kink in it, literally. So,
But I was just saying, you can also have to the different types of kink. For example, trainers is a huge one. Trainers and sneakers and boots, and that sort of.
Well, hang on. Before we say, we should say we're doing this from a particular perspective.
Definitely. I'm just really, really aware that myself and Andy are both cis white gay men, so we're not really in a position to speak to fetishes that might be unique to trans people or women or people of colour or anything like that. So we're just speaking.
Or Alid.
or feet. We are just speaking very generally about kind of fetish and the history of it, without coming at it from any specific.
Sorry,
angle.
Andy, I didn't mean to interrupt.
History-wise, the first recorded use of it as a term was actually by the Portuguese way back in the 18th century. So it's been knocking around for quite a few hundred years.
Oh, wow.
Where it was used to refer to objects used in West African religious ceremonies. But obviously, that was the term being used. People have had fetishes and kinks for pretty much as long as there have been people. It's definitely not a new thing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Then going, I mean, I can go on going on. I just had this sea of expectant faces.
You were expecting something there. So, dinosaur porn actually comes from cavemen chasing dinosaurs.
What the hell do you watch?
I feel there might be some slight inaccuracy in there. I think probably dinosaur fetish more relates to dinosaurs doing fetishy things with each other.
Kinky dinosaurs.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Oh, wow. You've seen those ones with the big spiky mohawk that goes all the way along the back. Yeah. That's
going to say, some of them are quite horny as well. Oh, put on bunch.
Yes, I think our foray into dinosaur porn predates you joining us on the show, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it completely does. Because I am like, what the hell? Where is this show going? Dinosaur porn.
It's already
brilliant.
Been.
Yes. We are live from Shoutout, bringing you the most classy of information.
You joke about it, though. I'm sure that everybody has seen those inflatable dinosaur costumes that you can get and wear.
No, really?
Yeah, you must have seen them.
No, I have seen them, but I think I know where this is going.
But there is a really, really big fetish for inflatable things, and whether that's inflatable rubber outfits or people who take inflatable pool toys and turn them into wearable things. And it's a really big thing. There is pretty much a fetish for anything. Absolutely. Yeah, anything.
I was going to say balloons or there's.
But
do you
think we're still too prudish about it?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, talking about there being a fetish for everything, going back to the history. I mean, back in the 19th century, when silk and velvet were first starting to be introduced to Victorian society, they very, very quickly became fetish items and were made into underwear and were made into items of clothing that you wouldn't wear in public, but you would use to titillate your partner. And again, that's both male and female people were doing that. Pretty much as soon as a new fabric was made or a new material was found or manufactured, people would fetishize it.
Corduroy.
yeah, completely.
I was just saying, you've also got things like in the early 1920s, what the butler saw machines, a lot of them were supposed to be scantily clad women in a sort of silk negligees and things like that, because that was seen as being something of a fetish for lots of sort of white men of late Victorian sort of 20th century society.
And although now I guess kind of lacy underwear is seen as very mainstream, it certainly never used to be. Underwear, if people wore it at all, was just very,
well,
it was very
functional. I believe very expensive when it first came around, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it still can be now.
Yes, please. Yeah. You must have gone to some of the shops. But jockstraps are not cheap.
No, jockstraps, yes, they're not.
And lacy, any nice looking underwear is expensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To be honest,
especially when you add a label and a name to it, also inflate
and when
the price.
The amount of fabric is reducing, but the price is increasing, it doesn't make sense in my head.
I was going to butt in there when Alan was talking and say, a good place to explore fetishes are actually charity shops. I found, because you're right, in specialised adult outlets it can be very expensive, but over the years I've collected leather trousers. I don't want to reveal what I've got at home, but I've got leather motorcycle trousers. I found sports kit so I can pretend
I'm
with Steven Gerrard.
We talked about that last week. Do you know what I mean? In the post-show debrief.
Yeah, so there is actually loads. So if you're interested in exploring your interests further, do pop along to your local charity shop, because you never know what you might find.
Just put it on a boil wash first.
Although I'm guessing you probably don't get many jock straps in charity shops.
No. Well, I mean, we are rapidly running out of time, but it is a big, thriving community, not just here, but across the world, I would imagine, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that certainly wearing fetish-related gear is becoming much more mainstream now. You see it on the television. There was a series on Netflix called Bonding, which
really
was very good, very
it
funny.
Was so good.
You see it on there's just recently been a catwalk collection released where all of the models were wearing inflatable rubber trousers that made them look like they'd got huge ankles, and the
harnesses are way into fashion now. Versace and Armani have been putting them on their catwalks.
And high street stores that are selling kind of PVC and vinyl clothing, and it's really common. But it's really interesting to note that even though the gear is becoming much more mainstream, the the kinks, the acts, the fetishistic behaviour is still very, very taboo. Even within the LGBT community, we're still kind of having that old conversation of should people be wearing fetish gear at Pride or out in venues and things like that, because the actual act itself is still seen as very taboo.
Well, isn't that an association, though? Because if you're wearing stuff and you're at Pride, you're just in like fetish kit, for example. You're not actually performing a kinky act or anything. It's the association between what you might do if you're wearing that cloth. But you're not. You're there and you're just at Pride. And
I think that's kind of a whole conversation in and of itself around the kind of Pride becoming family
friendly. I think it's the unconscious bias of society against the LGBT community as being over-sexualized, whereas sometimes we're wearing those costumes, let's say, that provide us with the confidence to be able to go out or to wear them and to kind of have a different alias. You know, their kind of perception or unconscious bias is the LGBT community is all about sex. So they see that and they link it straight to sex. Where actually it probably has nothing, at times, nothing to do with it. It's just what that person...
Actually, Alad, last week, you described perfectly for me what wearing my kit means to me. Yeah. And you said it was something along the lines of, it's an extension of my personality that I don't get to express in my day-to-day life.
You did listen to the show, because I did say that.
You said, I always feel at my most confident and my most attractive when I'm in drag. And that's how I feel in my rubber or my leather.
I always say when I'm in drag, like, I feel the most sexual, but I act the least sexual when I'm in drag. Yeah. Like, I feel the most sexy.
You said I feel most sexy when I'm in a gown that's figure hugging and I have to breathe through my ears. I'm not quite sure what you meant by what you were doing to breathe through your ears, but still.
Well, listen, it's been lovely to. It's nice to find out some of the history as well.
Yeah.
Behind it and where it all came from, and if you're listening and it's something that, you know, you're interested in exploring, I personally say, like, have a certain place like Facebook for the different groups.
Yeah,
and,
definitely. I mean, we have the Swarm group, the Southwest Rubbermen, that you're more than welcome to look us up. And if you want to talk to us about the history of it, we're always interested. If you want to talk to us about the way it's addressed in society today, if you want to talk to us about those sorts of things, you're always more than welcome to get in touch. We're always interested to chat about it.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you. Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute.
The Shout Out Podcast.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
There you go. That was Don't Start Now by, how would you say that, Dua Lipa?
Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa.
Her new song, Physical, is just as much of a bop as that one.
Is it?
So I saw that.
Yeah. Perhaps I'll play that next week.
Yeah, it's great.
So. Anyway, welcome back, Mr. I'm not giving away my fetish because I go to the shops and buy things.
Quite open, isn't me and Stephen Gerrard.
I like chavs.
You like chavs?
Oh, yeah.
Well, are we allowed to say, some people I think might get...
Scallies, then.
Scallies?
A nice bit of rough trade.
It was very popular. When I worked in an adult store, a gay adult store, actually the scally videos
went off
the shelves, like, yeah.
Always got one hand on the trousers.
I think they
have that look in their eye where you don't know whether they're going to beat you up afterwards. Oh.
Well, I mean, Oscar Wilde said it was feasting with panthers when he used to date sort of what at the end of the 19th century were like miners and postboys and bellboys in hotels and things like that. You know, that's what he said it was.
I found it an interesting subject. It was nice to hear some of the history, where it came from, too.
I always think us as queer people, we are so kind of in a privileged position where we can explore these kinks and fetishes with potentially like less of having to fit to a societal norm as our heterosexual
allies.
Well,
that's changing, isn't it?
So
the
like,
more that being LGBT plus is accepted, the more you're kind of expected to start conforming to those norms.
But explore it. There is a colourful world out there, and paint with all the colours of the wind.
Yes.
And the rainbow, in fact.
Indeed.
Yes.
Anyway, this is News Extra.
It is.
Extra.
What's our subject today?
Tonight is actually our friends over at the BBC.
Which is also a fetish.
BBC presenters, Points West presenters, perhaps. I don't know.
The British Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah, if you want to know about the other BBC, I'd say Google.
Just learn how to clear your history.
My mind is boggling now.
I was going to say, the BBC started off as the British Broadcasting Company. It did. Well, yes, you're right. Wasn't the corporation until I think about 1926.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
When its original charter says it must educate, entertain, and inform.
Well, the question tonight is, how do we feel as LGBTQ people about the BBC and the future of the BBC? Now, for people that may be listening, some of our overseas listeners are not aware, the BBC is Britain's public service broadcaster, and it operates 8 television stations, including BBC Three, which is online. It broadcasts 10 national radio stations, 6 stations for the Celtic countries, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland, including stations in the Welsh and Scottish languages, and over 40 local radio stations within England. It also operates the BBC World Service, which is listened to around the globe and is actually very well respected for independent news.
Is its future in jeopardy or something?
Well, we have unprecedented number of questions about the BBC. We've got a very free market orientated government which openly criticises the corporation and believes that it's a bloated organisation. It has 40,000 staff, by the way, and is biased against their kind of free market conservatism. They say it's a liberal bias, but interestingly, the hard left wing also believe the BBC is biased against them. So in essence, the BBC can't actually win because it's being criticised by both sides. And some people feel that the way the TV licence fee, which pays for BBC television, strictly speaking, it also pays for part of S4C in Wales, but that's another story. That's a big
bone of contention, isn't it? Especially with like these online streaming services. So some Netflix is there, Prime is there, we've got Disney launching very, very soon. There's more and more of them coming.
So my questions to the panel tonight are, would you welcome the abolition of the TV licence fee and go over to a system similar to what they have in Norway, where recently the TV licence was abolished in favour of voluntary donations to the public service broadcaster?
Yeah. And you see, I kind of... The problem is, I like... The BBC is just there, and I don't watch a huge amount on it, but I do use iPlayer a lot, and I do use it as one of my big sources of news. I have the app on my phone and read it, and it's just there. You don't have to worry. It's not filled with adverts, which is the big thing I hate when you go anywhere else.
Same issue, Andy. Yeah. Adverts.
It is that advert bit that I can't stand.
Also, you know, when we're talking about the abolition of the licence fee and its public donation, just how much are they going to receive in that? Yeah. And also, it comes to the point where if people are happy to pay a subscription for Apple TV, for Amazon, for Netflix, which, yes, you can argue there is much more of a wider source of things to be able to watch on those services, why are we not paying for a service, really, that you get so much for your money with regards to channels and radio stations and everything else?
Could we look at maybe the local stations and their validity and do they represent the communities that they broadcast in?
Well, a couple of years ago I would have said no, certainly here in Bristol, but as we know, people like BBC Radio Bristol are trying to make leaps and bounds to improve that, but correct me if I'm wrong there.
It's very original, slow and very slow, conservative. Yeah.
But local radio, I think, is needed very, very much.
But do you think community radio fills the gap that the BBC local radio stations are not covering?
Yeah, potentially.
So look at how diverse BCFM is, where we're broadcasting from now, and how undiverse the broadcast output is from Radio Bristol and Somerset.
But then, is that sometimes, say, with Radio Somerset, is that sometimes reflective of their population? It doesn't necessarily reflect the same as Bristol. For example, Somerset, and North Somerset in particular, has a higher population from Central and Eastern European countries, whereas Bristol has a higher population of Afro-Caribbean or
But African. Do any of those stations actually supply programming?
Well, I think it's changing.
The national channels do.
I think it's changing. I don't think it's all there yet, but I think we should give the BBC some credit because it is trying to change. But I think the problem is that with so many people coming at it in all directions, can it change fast enough to please everyone? And does it need to please everyone? Should it be saying, actually, we are trying our best, we know we're going to get it wrong sometimes?
Well, Radio Bristol made a huge step with this particular show last year.
They did.
The first time ever they took 4 hours of our Pride broadcast And that was brilliant. And this year they're saying they want to take the whole thing. That's a huge step for the BBC.
It is. And for listeners, again, overseas that don't understand the sort of British setup, the stations we broadcast on normally, which are community stations, are very low power. They just cover the city or even part of a city.
And we do all this for free.
We're all volunteers. It's all volunteer. BBC Radio Bristol is a very powerful station, covers the whole region.
And they're paid.
On multiple platforms and obviously has paid staff. And they did a fantastic job taking our Pride broadcast, and you know, for
we won an award.
Yeah,
we got bronze.
We did win an award. Yeah, bronze award at the Gillards.
It is a real catch 22 because it's like, you know, the BBC, they're not usually on the very tip of it, because I think it was Channel 4 who had things like the first lesbian kiss on TV. But it is nice to see they are on the mainstream on shows like EastEnders,
I was going to say, you know, you've got in EastEnders currently, you've got a lesbian couple, and one being Sikh, one being Muslim, and they're talking about the kind of racial kind of differences that those two cultures have within their families and how accepting they are of each other as a relationship, let alone the fact that they are lesbian. You've got Ben, who is gay, struggling, and then we had Callum, and before Callum we had Paul, who was then kind of killed in
EastEnders, they all died.
but he was killed in a hate crime, and you don't even have to look at EastEnders, just look at Years and Years. You know, that was written by Russell T Davies, massive LGBT icon. Starred Russell Tovey as the main star, who also is a gay man. It featured
I don't think
a gay
the BBC
story.
Have an issue with their national stations, radio or otherwise. They proudly broadcast people of colour, trans presenters, gay presenters, and they're out. Whereas local BBC stations don't tend to go that route.
But the BBC Trust has recommended more diversity on local radio, so hopefully we'll get that. So I think, broadly speaking, in conclusion, people are sort of saying, we're very much in favour of public service broadcasting
personally,
in this country.
I think it will probably move to a subscription model, I think is the way it will go, because I think you'll see there's so much more going online now, and people are more and more consuming things online. I can see that it becoming something that's no longer a legal requirement, but something that you subscribe to the different services the BBC do. I can't see the licence fee staying, if I'm honest, even though I personally quite like it.
The Tories are dead against keeping the licence.
Well, I would say so broadly, always have been to some extent.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But that's another story for another day. Thanks, guys.
That's it for another week. As always, tonight's show will be available to download online later this evening.
Hey, just head over to our online home at shoutoutradio.lgbt, where you can browse a whopping 5 years of shows.
Oh, God, what did we say, like 5 years ago? anyway, next week we're celebrating International Women's Day, but from myself and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.